So as we close this progress series, we've been talking about technology, but I don't want to spend the time today kind of out there thinking about what's happening with technology as much as I feel like this is a day for us to focus right here. A day for us to really wrestle with and understand, God, what are you saying to us in the midst of this technology series? So we don't typically title messages at Crossroads, but if this was a titled message, I would call this message The Practice of Soul Care. That's what I want to talk about today. Now, soul, that's a word that we hear. What do I mean when I use the word soul? Well, you know, we see it in a bunch of different contexts, right? We hear about soulmates. That's one way we use it. Another way that we might use the word soul is when we talk about soul music, which I think is some of the best music, by the way, right? Soul music, another way. And then we may talk about it like soul food. I mean, that's another way we can. This is Black Church Weekend at Crossroads, so I'm just telling you right now. Soul music, soul food. Like, we use that term. What do I mean when I say soul? Well, I'm thinking about the way the Bible describes it. It's the essence of what makes you really you. It's kind of that internal part of who you are. So that's your mind, it's your will, it's your emotions, it's your desires. It's that. That's what I mean when I use the word soul. It's kind of the essence of what really makes you you. You know, we're all over the map, perhaps spiritually, in what we might believe about God, the Bible, and Jesus, and no matter where you are on that, we're excited that you're here. And yet all of us would probably say that we are spiritual beings, that there is some aspect of really who we are that's not just tangible and physical, and that's the part that I'm talking about when I talk about the soul. And the practice of soul care is about having rhythms and relationships that enable us to actually have a whole life, to have a healthy and full life, to have, if you want to think about it this way, a life of depth and meaning and impact. That's soul care. So I want to tell you a story about the soul. It is a story that comes from years and years ago when European missionaries were in Africa and they were there to share the good news of Jesus. And so a set of missionaries had gone to an African community and they asked some of the African people who were native there to be their porters for this journey they were taking from one place to another. And, you know, Africans agreed. And so as they were going out, quickly the missionaries began to get frustrated because the porters were not going as fast as they wanted to go. And so, you know, after a couple days of this, they actually kind of said to them, hey, we want to go faster. We want to cover more ground than what we've been covering. And so the next day, they actually covered twice the distance that they had been covering on average on the days before. And then the following morning, when they got up to leave, the missionaries were ready to go, the porters said, we're not going anywhere today. And the missionaries are kind of frustrated and like, what do you mean we're not going anywhere? Like, is somebody sick? And they're like, no, it's not that. They said, yesterday, we went so fast and we covered so much ground that today we're staying put so our souls can catch up. And I just want you to think about that. I want you to think about the last week of your life, maybe the last 24 hours of your life. And I just want you to ask the question to yourself, how is it with your soul? How's it going with your soul? Are you and your soul together at the same place? Or have you been living life at such a pace that if you're honest, you need some time for your soul to catch up? That's what soul care is all about. And I think it's deeply challenging in a world where technology is changing and life is changing so quickly. So just to review where we've been in this series, week one, we said that God's heart for you is for progress. God wants you to progress. But what we said is that progress in God's view is about growing in wisdom. And there's a problem when our power outpaces our wisdom. And one of the challenges we have with technology is technology significantly increases our power. In fact, the power is doubling at a crazy fast pace, but it doesn't necessarily mean that our wisdom is keeping pace with our power. And we said when those are out of whack, we have a problem. So week two, we heard from a guy, Andy Stanley, who has a great perspective on how we can get those two things into balance. And at the essence of what he said, this thing can either be a tool, in which case it's increasing capacity and it's under our authority, or it can be a device where it's actually taking from us the very thing that we need to grow and develop. He put it this way, he said, one of the temptations of technology is that life is easy everywhere. But easy everywhere isn't necessarily good. And then last week, Brian said, the greatest technology that God has ever invented, that will ever be created, is you and me, people. And oftentimes, our devices, when they're used like devices, actually isolate us from the greatest technology, the greatest thing in God's earth, which is people. So I've been processing this like you, and I've been thinking about, well, what is this? What am I to take from this series? What am I learning in the midst of this? And what I realized is there's a through line, and it's a very clear through line. My cell phone is not the problem. My iPad is not the problem. In fact, the internet is not the problem. Technology is not the problem. Silicon Valley is not the problem. My name is Chuck Mingo, and I'm the problem. I'm the problem. It isn't about technology. It's about how I'm using it. It's about how am I in this world still prioritizing the care of my soul. How is it with your soul? The Bible has a lot to say about the soul, but one of the places where we see this mentioned is in the book of Deuteronomy. This is one of the first five books in the Bible. And Deuteronomy specifically is kind of like, okay, they've been slaves. The nation of Israel has been slaves at this point for 400 years. They've come out of slavery miraculously. That's the book of Exodus. And they're kind of at the point where Moses, their leader, is reminding them of what it means to be people of God. He's basically saying this, you know what? You've been on a path toward progress, the progress of freedom, but now the real question is, what kind of people will you be when you get to the place of freedom? And so he's reminding them of what it means to be the covenant of people of God. And at the end, toward the end of the book, he starts to give them warnings and say, hey, here's what will happen if you take your eye off of what it means to live as God has intended you to live. And he talks about them going into other lands and kind of following the ways of other countries and their gods. And this is what he says in Deuteronomy 28. 65, he says, and among these nations you shall find no respite, and there shall be no resting place for the sole of your foot. But the Lord will give you there a trembling heart and failing eyes and a languishing soul. What this tells us is your soul can languish even in a place of progress. So how is it with your soul? And I think that's why earlier in the book of Deuteronomy, God says this to his people, and I think these words are for us today. He says, only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. And this is so important. God says, make them known to your children and your children's children. So why would God have to do this? Why would God have to remind us to take care of our souls? If a soul is the essence of who we are, if it's that part of us that really makes us who we are, then you would think, yeah, we'll constantly prioritize the care of that. And we would be in partnership with God on that. But he says, hey, there's some things that are going to come your way that you need to remember. Like one of them is this. This is in my house right now, a couple favorite pastimes we have. One of them is we have rediscovered the show America's Funniest Home Videos. Does anybody else watch that show anymore? It is so funny. I'm telling you, I love the show. And there's like recurring bits on the show. And one of them is this one. I'm sure you've seen this in some video or some clip. A person is like walking full speed or running full speed and they don't recognize the clear glass in front of them. So they kind of walk and it's like, bam, and then they hit it. That's always so funny. I'm sure it's not funny to the person, but it's funny to me. It's funny to me. But it is definitely not funny to the person. But isn't life like that? We take hits in life, and they're unexpected. The hit of grief, the hit of disappointment, the hit of fear, whatever it may be, I think God is saying you have to take care of your soul because you're going to take hits in life. And when you take hits, it impacts your soul. But another reason God would say take care of your soul is because we are forgetful people. We will forget to do this. In fact, I want to give you a challenge. So I call this the gratitude challenge, and this is something that you can see sometimes in the Crossroads app. I think it's just a really good exercise. I'm going to give you 20 seconds, and I want you to think about 10 things you can be thankful for that have happened in the last 24 hours of your life. 10 things that have happened in the last 24 hours, 20 seconds, time on the clock, and let's do it. Thank you. All right, time's up. How many people got to 10? How many people got to 10? Okay, a lot of people got to 10. Isn't it amazing? You could have kept going. In the last 24 hours, I'm sure all of us, if we thought about it, there are things to be thankful for. Now, if you had asked me, hey, Chuck, how's the last day of your life been? You think I would have told you those 10 things? No. I would point out the one thing that's gone wrong, right? Anybody with me on that? Like, it's just so easy for us to forget. And so I think God is saying, you need to cultivate your soul because you're forgetful people. And you can oftentimes focus on the hits and forget. Forget what it means to cultivate your soul. Gratitude is a way that we can cultivate our soul. But I think the other reason that God would say, take care of your soul, keep it diligently, is because there is nothing more important than the restoration of your soul. Look at what Jesus says in Mark 8:36. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and to forfeit his soul? And when we hear these words, it's easy to think, yeah, Jesus is saying, what? It's not a good life if you accumulate all the stuff in this world and then you go to hell. And you know what? Hell is a real place and people go there. And it's one of the reasons why we want to be aggressive in sharing the good news of Jesus with everyone we can. And at the same time, I don't think that's what Jesus is talking about in this verse. I think he's actually saying this. He's saying, if you're not on a path of cultivating your soul, of being with God and allowing God to restore your soul, there's a level of hell that you will experience right here and right now. There's a work of fiction that C.S. Lewis wrote called The Great Divorce. And in this book, he is giving a picture of the difference between heaven and hell. And this, again, it's fictitious. This isn't a book of him saying, I've been to these places, but based on what he read in the scriptures and based on how God had inspired him to write, he's writing about these two places. And it's really interesting because when he describes people in hell, he describes them as almost like transparent and wispy. Like there's no substance to them. They're kind of like, they're just not really all there. And at one point, people from hell get a chance to experience heaven. And he says that when their feet touch the ground in heaven, it hurts their feet. Because as opposed to hell being a place where there's just this wispiness and kind of like insubstantiation of people, here in heaven, people are weighty and the place is full and there's a fullness of it. And that's what the word glory means. It means fullness and presence. And he's saying like, man, that's what it is. And John Eldridge is a guy who has inspired me around this. And he says this, right now in our lives, you are either growing in substance or withering away right now. You are either growing toward the restoration of your soul, therefore growing toward being a weighty, substantial person in your relationship with God, or you are withering away right now, and this world will keep giving you hits that ultimately wind up languishing and having you have a soul that languishes. How is it with your soul? Well, one of the ways to know is another question. When you hit the wall, or the glass you're not looking for, is your default restoration, things that restore your soul, or is your default to seek relief at any cost? I put it to you this way, think about it like fast food. We all know that if I'm hungry, there are places within minutes of where I am right now where I can get food. A lot of places. But all food is not created equal, right? So there are some places that I can go. I can get food, but we know that the nutritional value of that food is so shallow that ultimately I'm going to be hungry again before I need to be. Where by the same token, there are other choices I can make to eat food that's more substantial, nutritious. And if I choose that, then over time, it actually gives strength and fullness to me physically in a way that other foods can't. And you know what? The same is true for our souls. We are either seeking relief at any cost or we're seeking restoration of the soul. We are either seeking medication or maturation. And so Jesus wants us to know, man, you have to take care of your soul. How is it with your soul? I'll be honest with you. I didn't like the answer to that question for me this week. It's been a really challenging week in a lot of ways. It's been a week of disappointment, discouragement, a lot of difficulty, struggle. It's been hard. Started off on Monday when I went to the doctor hoping that he would say, take this boot off. You're good. Not 100% healed, but you're good enough to take the boot off. And I go in the office and he's like, oh, no, not yet. Not yet. I've been in this thing for 3 months. He's like, nah, you got to stay in it a little bit longer. And then he starts telling me about people who have to stay in it for 6 months. I'm like, ah, la, 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 la. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. Processing that, going through some really difficult things in terms of, you know, work around here and just challenging situations. Man, it's just been a really hard week. And then probably 3-4 times this week, I had an experience that is not unfamiliar to me, but it's been a while since it's happened, where I was either in a meeting, one time I was driving, and I started to feel like I was about to pass out. And I know enough about me and what that's meant before to know, like, man, that's anxiety, that's panic attacks coming back. And man, I just got to tell you, even with all that was going on, with all the hits that I was taking, it was so tempting to seek relief at any cost. Distraction, binge watch this, click on that. It was so tempting to do that and to not do the thing that I know substantively makes a difference, which is actually say, I need to look at this and say, this is an outage in soul care. So how can I care for my soul? See, because when I seek relief, and I do, when I seek relief at any cost, that's an outage in my soul. And it never, ever satisfies. And I just know that for me, that's a warning flag. And I also know I can't choose restoration on my own. It's not a willpower thing. It's not a like, you know, muscle up and do it right thing. That doesn't work for me. And that's why I'm so glad that I have a good shepherd who makes it his business to restore the soul. I'm so glad that's the reality that I can lean into in the times when I'm weak, like I've been this week. And so there's a verse. This might have been one of the earliest verses you ever memorized. You might pray this with your kids at night still. And I think that with fresh eyes, God wants us to lean into the truth of Psalm 23, which says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. And I love what it says next. He restores my soul. This is such good news. If you're stressed out, this is good news. If you're discouraged, this is good news. If you're struggling in how to actually care for your soul, this is great news to know that you don't have to be the shepherd of your own soul, but you can say, God, I'm a sheep, and I need a good shepherd who will restore my soul. And what will he do? He'll say, hey, come here. Lie down in these green pastures that I have for you. Hey, come here. Just relax beside these still waters where I want to meet you. Green pastures and still waters, beauty and stillness are the ways that God restores the soul. Beauty and stillness. And I want to tell you, these two things will be vigorously opposed by a life that moves at a pace that outpaces the soul. These two things will constantly be a challenge to make space for and find in a world where we can always take the easy way out. And so I want to talk to you about beauty and how to drink in real beauty. I had a conversation with a friend this week that was really helpful for me, where we were talking about how do you deal with sin? How do you deal with sin? And what do I mean when I say sin? Well, in the Bible, when the word sin is used, it means to miss the mark. It's actually an archery term. And so you can think about it this way. The degree of sin is the degree to which where you are pointing is not the bullseye of God's best and wholeness and restoration. That's what sin is. And he gave me a different way to look at this from some stuff he had been reading. You can think about sin as infatuation. Anybody ever been infatuated? Ever had a crush, right? And what, when you have a crush, how does it work? Like, you're desperately hoping that this person wants you, and they don't, right? They don't, it doesn't work. And so infatuation actually, it gives us all the things we think we want, but ultimately it fades. And what I'm realizing is, you know what? That's true for every addiction, distraction in our lives. I mean, no matter what it is, if it's sex, if it's busyness, if it's money, if it's power, whatever it is that you would go to for relief at any cost when life is difficult, know this, over time, like every addiction, it will promise more and more and deliver less and less. And not only that, over time, it will take more and more. And so ultimately, it costs you your life. And what profits a man to gain the whole world and lose their soul? Now, even though that's true, here's what does not work. It does not work to say, so get off your phone then. Stop using the internet that way then. You need to have less time on this. You need to do this differently with technology. That never works. That never works. You know what does work? There's a guy, he was an 18th century preacher. He didn't have anything digital in his life, but he said words that are so true in the digital age. His name is Thomas Chalmers. And he said, if you want to break the hold that something beautiful has over the soul, you have to show it something more beautiful. You have to show it something more beautiful. One of the insights I had this week is I recognize this thing wants to drive me to a two-dimensional life. And think about it. When you're looking at a screen, it wants to drive me to, yeah, I still have height and I still have width, but everything I'm seeing is two-dimensional. And there's a big difference between two-dimensional life and three-dimensional life. What's the third dimension? Depth. Depth. And I would argue that beauty is found in the depth of things. It's found in the third dimension of things. What is it about a fire pit? Think about it. Why can you sit around a fire pit for hours and never need to change the channel to a different fire pit? You can just stare at the flame. You've seen it before, but you can stare. Why? Because it's a real depth thing. It's a created thing. There's something about it. And that's because everything of beauty that we see reflects the creator who made it. And it expands and enlarges our soul to be able to experience life in the fullness of what God has for us. What is it about a park? Taking a walk in a park versus taking a walk in a treadmill. They both have the same physiological value to you. You can burn calories doing both. But am I the only one that sees a vast difference in what it does to my heart and soul if I'm out in nature versus if I'm on a treadmill staring at a window? It's because it's a third dimension of depth. So what Brian was talking about last week with people, there's power when we step into that dimensional reality where we're interacting with people. Nothing will ever replace a hug. Nothing will ever replace a high five. Nothing will ever replace experiencing life and having people around you. Depth in your relationships. So I want to encourage you to drink in beauty and don't settle for a two-dimensional life when what we need to restore our soul is a three-dimensional life. That includes beauty. A friend of mine has a really practical thing on this. He says, every day, I force myself to go outside and look at the sky before I look at a screen. That's just a very practical way to just say, I'm gonna remind myself that what I'm seeking is found in the real world. It's found in the three-dimensional world. Two-dimensional realities, two-dimensional entertainment, there's a place for that. But I'm going to remind myself that there's a more beautiful thing that ultimately will satisfy. Beauty, green pastures. In the last few minutes, let's talk about stillness. Stillness. One of the things that Andy Crouch said was he practices a technology Sabbath and a rhythm of that in his life where for an hour a day, for one day a week, and for one week a year, there's no technology. And I was like, man, I like that. And for him, he talked about the hour a day as the family dinner, which we do the same thing. So I'm like, all right, we got a daily time. And if anybody violates that, it's usually me. So I've been putting my phone in a different place so I don't violate that. So we've got that. But then what about this like one day a week, which led to tech-free Fridays in our house. We've been trying this out in the midst of this series, kind of adopting this practice. Now, I will tell you, my kids don't like tech-free Fridays yet. They don't. Because they would come home from school, and that was their time to get to play on their Kindle or whatever. And so, you know, for us saying, hey, yeah, we're trying something new, they're like, we like the old thing. So they're not digging it so much yet, but I still think it's a good idea. And what I'm finding is this Tech Free Fridays is it's creating opportunity for fresh conversations that wouldn't be happening if any of us were on a screen. Like the one I had with my daughter yesterday, the one I had with her this weekend was, it was kind of like the afternoon time. I was doing some things to get prepared, single dadding it this weekend. And she says, hey, I want to go outside. And I'm like, oh man, you know what? Your brothers are outside, but they're so far away. They were down at another neighbor's house across some streets and stuff. I'm like, you can't go outside until they come back because I need somebody to be outside with you. To which my four-year-old responds, well, Dad, God will be with me outside. You're right, Isabel, he will. But I need a person to be with you outside. Well, Dad, God's a person. My four-year-old is breaking down the Trinity to me. I'm like, this is darn preacher's kid. I couldn't shut her up. I'm like, man, you know, so it was so funny because I'm just thinking about like, man, that interaction happened because we've removed something and created space for something. And here's what I would say about stillness. It's easy for us to think about stillness as the absence of something, but I want to submit to you that stillness is the presence of someone. That stillness is where you will most encounter the presence of God. There's a story in the Bible of a prophet named Elijah, and Elijah needed a presence of God. He needed God to restore his soul. And the story says there was an incredibly powerful wind that came, but God was not in the wind. And then it says there was a really powerful earthquake that shook the very foundations of the earth, but God was not in the earthquake. And then it says there was a quiet, gentle whisper, and God was in the whisper. I believe that God's presence is more accessible to us when we practice a rhythm of creating spaces of stillness, not to eliminate things, but to actually experience Him. In fact, I want to just do something really briefly now. And I'm asking God that even in the midst of this, you would experience Him moving a bit closer to you. So I want you to close your eyes, no matter where you are. Go ahead and close your eyes. And I just want to read God's truth from Psalm 46:10 over you. And I'm gonna read it a couple times. And my prayer is that my voice will fade and the presence of God will increase in this moment for you. Psalm 46:10 says, "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know Be still Be When you're ready, you can open your eyes. You know, our world tells us that we have to be doing, we have to fill every moment with noise and distraction. And I want to submit to you, man, there is a place for doing in this world. There is absolutely stuff to get done. Think about what we talked about today. We got people down in the hurricane zone that are helping to bring rescue. There are people who are a part of our team, even though they're behind bars. There's all kinds of incredible things that people are doing. And at the same time, never mistake the need for doing in the outer world with yours and my need for being in our inner world. Deuteronomy 4:9. Only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children. So I want to do something really briefly in our time. After we leave this place or disconnect from this experience, we're gonna go right back into the world we had before we were together. But I wanna submit to you that you can go back into that world a different person. And if there is anything that we should take away from this series, it is this invitation that God gives us to be people who show up differently in the world, people who continue to prioritize the care of our soul, even as the pace in our world continues to progress. Be a part of that progress. Absolutely. Lead that progress. Create culture. Create technology. And practice soul care. So if you want to just put your hands out like this as a sign of receiving, in this moment, this is just a sign of you saying, you know what, God, I'm going to do that. I want to continue to figure out what it looks like for me to be and do. And I just want to pray a blessing over you, God. I just pray that for every person who is extending their hands, that you would give them what they need to care for their soul. My hands are out, God. I need you to be a good shepherd. I need to remember that I'm a sheep that needs to come to the shepherd for care. And I pray, God, for all of us who do that, that there would just be a weightiness to us, that there would be a gravitas to our lives because we've been cared for by you. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. I'm gonna invite you guys to stand. We're gonna sing a little bit of this song as we end.
I am chosen, not forsaken.
Talking a lot about how to live this out practically as we've talked our relationship with technology. If you go to crossroads.net/articles, we've got tools and resources to help you continue to live this out as we go beyond this series. God bless you guys. We'll see you next weekend for the first week of Empires.